content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards with another edition of the Armchair Traveler from the North Carolina Reading Service. And for the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the News and Observer. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Because of limitations and cancellations posed by the pandemic, many people are staying closer to home this summer. As Melanie D.G. Kaplan's article suggests, as summer gets underway, a look at this year's 10 best U.S. cities for parks. Her article found in the June 26, 2020 issue of the Washington Post, and this is where we begin our journey. This spring, I've found hope hiking on wooded trails, joy spotting foxes around a forest, and comfort strolling in open pastures. For jet setters, road trippers, and backpackers alike, parks, quiet, spacious, safe, and nourishing, have helped us cope with the pandemic in so many ways. Even as stay-at-home orders become suggestions over the next months, and some of us cautiously travel outside our hometowns, parks will remain important destinations on our itineraries. If and when you visit parks in other areas of the country, check for reopening updates and current restrictions. Some parks require masks. Be respectful of locals and understand that residents rely on neighborhood parks for their own physical and mental health. In my own park visits, I've had more ease with social distancing when I visit during slower times, early mornings and weekdays. If a park is too crowded, try another day or another park. According to park websites, many facilities, bathrooms, visitor centers, water fountains around the country remain closed, so plan accordingly. Some cities don't expect their outdoor pools to open this summer. A funny spot in this pandemic is the number of slow streets, in quotes, or roadways that are closed to all or most car traffic to create safe spaces for pedestrians, runners, and cyclists. Cities that have designated slow streets include Minneapolis, Washington, D.C., Portland, and San Francisco. Seattle announced that 20 miles of roads would permanently close to most vehicle traffic, a move that other progressive cities may follow. In May, the Trust for Public Land released its annual Park Score Index, ranking U.S. cities on their parks based on acreage, access for residents, amenities, and investment. This year, Minneapolis unseated Washington for the top park score spot. Now, following are the top 10 park score cities, with some spots the cities and locals suggest for social distancing. One caution, you may want to inquire about any current restrictions or changes before you visit one of these parks, or perhaps another park of your choosing. Now, number 10 on the list is Chicago. With Chicago's lakefront still closed, it's a good time to explore the city's green areas. Millennium Park, Lincoln Park, Grant Park, Burnham Park, Harold Washington Park, and Jackson Park all recently reopened. Humboldt Park, which features lagoons connected by a prairie river, is great for spreading out with your family. And Clark Park, on the east bank of the Chicago River, offers a new running trail that connects to Horner Park. Dan Ryan Woods is a 257-acre forest preserve on the south side with a mile-long paved loop that connects to 8-mile-long Major Taylor Trail. The Chicago Park District is deploying 100 social distancing ambassadors to provide guidance for visitors on health and safety. Number 9 is Boston. Boston's largest open space is Franklin Park, one of six parks that make up the Frederick Law Olmsted design chain called the Emerald Necklace. Head to Franklin for a walk around Scarborough Pond or to explore the wilderness, a 65-acre native oak forest with meandering paths. Millennium Park is a 100-acre park in the West Roxbury neighborhood with hiking trails, accessible walking trails, fields, and a canoe launch, formerly a landfill covered by dirt excavated from the Big Dig. Another place to social distance, the Neponset River Reservation, a natural inlet with marshlands, wetlands, and the 2-mile Quincy Riverwalk path. Number 8, San Francisco. Intrigued by social distancing circles, you can find them at Lafayette Mission Dolores, Washington Square, and Presida Parks, Little Marina Green, Alamo Square, and Jackson Playground. Golden State National Recreation Area, composed of 37 parks, 80,000 acres, and 130 miles of trails, includes spectacular spots such as the Presidio, forest, a lake, and dozens of miles for hiking and biking. Also check out National Park's Crissy Field, a great walking park on a former military airfield, and Land's End in the northwestern corner of the city, which offers a windy cliff trail and stunning views of the shore and Golden Gate. Number 7, Irvine, California. Thanks to this SoCal City's master plan, one-third of Irvine's land is preserved for outdoor recreation, including 62 miles of off-street trails and the largest acreage of natural habitats and wildlands in Orange County. The Orange County Great Park, repurposed from a decommissioned Marine Corps air station, Colonel Bill Barber Marine Corps Memorial Park, and Jeffrey Open Space Trail are three parks with spacious grassy areas, meadows, and paved walking and biking trails. Explore thousands of acres of native habitat through the Irvine Open Space Preserve, hiking or biking on wilderness trails such as Quail Hill, the only dog-friendly preserve area, and Bomber Canyon. Number 6 is Portland, Oregon. Forest Park is one of the country's largest urban parks, stretching for more than 7 miles along the Tualatin Mountains. The park is 5,200 acres with 80 miles of trails. Leif Erikson Drive, which is 11 miles long and plenty wide for distancing, is a local favorite. Peninsula Park, great for socially distanced picnics, includes formal gardens, the city's first public rose garden, paved paths also. Alternatively, visitors can loop around the Willamette River on the East Bank Esplanade and Waterfront Park Trail, crossing the Hawthorne Bridge at the south and Steel Bridge at the north. Number 5 is Cincinnati. Mount Airy Forest is the city's largest park with nearly 1,500 acres, including hiking, bridle, and mountain biking trails. The 119-year-old park has a wheelchair-accessible treehouse and an arboretum. The city encourages people to visit neighborhood parks such as Fleischmann Gardens, given to the city by Fleischmann Yeast Company Heirs, a beautifully landscaped 4-acre park with winding walkways and an evergreen maze, and Wilson Commons on the west side, with a walking loop and an overlook of the Ohio River. Burnett Woods, a top spot for birding and hiking, is a 90-acre park, and that's near the University of Cincinnati. Coming in fourth spot is Arlington, Virginia. While some of Arlington's top trails, Mount Vernon, 4-mile run, and WNOD are crowded at peak times, the city has plenty of open space at lesser-known spots such as Fort C.F. Smith, a 19-acre park with short trails, Civil War earthworks ruins, a lush tree canopy, and an open meadow. Longbridge Park, a stone's throw from the Pentagon and the Potomac, features open spaces and a wide raised esplanade overlooking the river and Roach's Run Waterfowl Sanctuary. Glen Carlin Park is nearly 100 acres with wooded trails and stream, and Arlington's National Park at Gravelly Point and Theodore Roosevelt Island are also social distance friendly. Number 3, St. Paul, Minnesota, two local favorites of Como and Phelan Regional Parks with large and picturesque lakes, walking paths around the perimeter, golf courses, open play areas, picnic spots, fishing piers, and boating access. Head to Indian Mounds Regional Park, home to 6 Native American burial grounds for biking and hiking trails, plus views of the Mississippi River and downtown St. Paul. And Crosby Farm is one of 3 regional parks along the Mississippi with 6 miles of paved trails. Number 2, Washington, D.C. The National Park Service manages hundreds of sites across the nation's capital, much of the total parkland in the city. Perhaps best known are the iconic monuments and memorials and the mall, with wide paths and ample grassy stretches. Rock Creek Park is a favorite among locals for its wooded hiking trails, paved paths, and open roadways. Anacostia Riverwalk Trail tends to be less busy than other walking and biking trails in the city. It passes through Kenilworth Park and Aquatic Gardens, a compact national forest park site, perfect for birding and strolling. The National Arboretum in Northeast is nearly 450 acres with hiking trails, open fields, almost 10 miles of winding roadways, and special collections of bonsais, ferns, dogwoods, azaleas, and herbs. And number one, it's Minneapolis. With 180 parks and 22 lakes, it's no surprise that Minneapolis has topped the park score list 4 of the last 5 years. Grand Rounds National Scenic Byway is a giant loop that links many of the city's most popular outdoor spaces and includes 51 miles of paths for social distancing. Enjoy the parkways that are now closed to cars in the area around the chain of lakes and riverfront. Mississippi Gorge Regional Park flanks the east and west banks of the river, stretching from Bridge No. 9 on the north edge of the Minnehaha Regional Park, known for its 53-foot waterfall and hikes. And yes, that's the name, Minnehaha. By the way, travel writer Melanie D.G. Kaplan is a freelancer. She lives in Washington, D.C. She has a website, minniedgkaplan.com. Kaplan is spelled K-A-P-L-A-N. That's Melanie D.G. Kaplan. And .com, and you can also find her on Twitter. Just go in at Melanie D.G. Kaplan, at Melanie D.G. Kaplan. Well, our ever-changing travel climate during the pandemic does pose a lot of challenges, doesn't it? Especially for those who like to travel. Reporter Tracy Richter has looked at how the pandemic has affected passports, global entry, TSA pre-checked, and more. Now, her article is found in the June 20th, 2020 issue of the New York Times, and I should put in a brief disclaimer here. These things change almost daily, if not certainly weekly, and so you may want to check just to be sure, but here's the latest information, as Tracy tells us in her article. After 3 months of travel at a near standstill, restrictions are slowly lifting and travelers are venturing out again. On Sunday, this was June 14th, the Transportation Security Administration screened more than 544,000 people, a daily record since traveler numbers plummeted in late March. However, disruptions caused by the pandemic go beyond just airports and travel bans. Nearly 2 million Americans in need of passports are facing severe delays because of processing center closures. People applying for security expediting services like TSA PreCheck or Global Entry may have had their interviews canceled for similar reasons. Here's what to expect when applying for travel documents and membership in security expediting programs. And the remainder of her article is done in a question and answer format, and we begin with the question, can I apply for or renew a U.S. passport now? A backlog of 1.7 million passports has piled up since the State Department shut down most of its consular services to protect its workers on March 19th, officials confirmed. 14 passport processing centers have reopened for limited service as of Monday, June 15th. Pending applications will be addressed on a first-in, first-out basis, beginning with the oldest applications received, some going back as far as February. Officials have said they hope to process about 200,000 applications each week, but that it could take up to 8 weeks before even starting on the new applications to cut through the backlog. That means if you're applying for a passport now, you should expect delays of at least 2 months, if not 3 or more. Unfortunately, expedited services, barring life or death circumstances, have been suspended until the final phase of reopening the passport offices, and there is no timeline yet announced for this. If you're considering using the services of a private expediting company, remember that they charge additional fees and cannot help you get your passport faster than if you apply in person at a passport agency. Next question, can I apply for Global Entry? What if my membership is about to expire? Global Entry is a program run by U.S. Customs and Border Protection that lets pre-approved members skip customs lines when returning to the United States from abroad. For a $100 application fee, a Global Entry membership is good for 5 years and includes TSA PreCheck. Global Entry is one of the CBP's trusted travelers programs, which includes Nexus, Sentry, and other expedited entry programs. Enrollment centers for trusted traveler programs, including those that process Global Entry applications, have suspended operations at least until July 6th, and I did not find an update on that, by the way. You can Google that and check. You can apply for conditional approval for Global Entry via the website, but we'll be unable to schedule an interview until after July 6th. Officials advise that the fastest way to get global entry now is to apply for conditional approval online and complete the enrollment process upon arrival from abroad at a participating airport. You won't need to pre-schedule an interview for this. Conditional approval can currently take between 15 days to more than 5 months. If you do decide to book an interview after July 6th, know that demand will be high and there may be long wait times to get an appointment. Global entry applicants who are conditionally approved have a year to complete an interview for their enrollment. The CBP recently extended this grace period to 485 days. Members who apply for renewal before their expiration is up will have an 18-month extension to their benefits instead of the usual 6 months. New Yorkers are still not eligible to apply for or renew Global Entry membership because of a freeze by the Trump administration earlier this year. Next question, what about TSA PreCheck? While TSA PreCheck is included in Global Entry, it is $15 cheaper to get the membership on its own, and the application process is generally faster. Run by the Transportation Security Administration, PreCheck breezes you through airport security. You will not need to remove your shoes, belt, or laptop. Membership costs $85 for 5 years. Some enrollment centers have closed or modified their hours during the pandemic, although most are open. If your interview appointment is canceled, you'll be notified and given a chance to rebook. TSA officials recommend making an appointment rather than walking into an enrollment center so you can know ahead of time of any disruptions and so the center can manage social distancing. Officials said the pandemic has not caused a backlog or delays in processing and that the approval process should take about 2 to 3 weeks. At some airports, PreCheck lanes may be temporarily closed because of low passenger numbers. If you are a PreCheck member not making use of your membership because you're not traveling, the TSA isn't currently offering refunds or extensions. There has been no disruption to processing memberships, which can be done on the spot at a designated clear pod with participating airports, a clear spokeswoman said. Some clear lanes may be temporarily closed at the discretion of the airports. Final question, can I still get a real ID, and what is a real ID? Well, you're not the only one wondering about this. According to a 2019 survey, most Americans did not have or were confused about Real ID, even though it will soon be a mandatory document in order to pass through security for domestic flights. As one response to the 9/11 terror attacks, Congress passed the Real ID Act in 2005. The act was intended to protect national security by establishing a federal standard for issuing driver's licenses and ID cards. Basically, it was created to put a stop to the proliferation of fake IDs. Real ID-compliant driver's licenses will be identified by a gold star in the top right corner. Because of the pandemic, the enforcement deadline of October 1, 2020, was extended by a year to October 1, 2021. The virus is the latest setback in a long and troubled rollout for the Real ID. Adding to the confusion is that the states issue driver's licenses, not the federal government. You will need to go to your state's motor vehicles department to get a Real ID, as many DMV offices throughout the country are currently closed or offering limited services during the pandemic. Real ID will be unavailable until in-person services have resumed in your state. Another enterprising New York Times travel writer, Paige McClanahan, recently sought some answers to what Americans need to know about Europe's travel ban. There's a lot about that in the news lately. And her latest findings, are found in the July 2nd, 2020 issue of the New York Times. Let's see what she offers. On July 1st, after months of lockdown, European nations began to open their borders to non-essential travelers coming from a select list of countries in which the COVID-19 pandemic has been deemed sufficiently under control. The United States is not on the list. Moreover, the U.S. State Department continues to advise U.S. citizens to avoid all international travel. The situation is changing rapidly, but here is what we know about travel to Europe right now. Again, this is a question-and-answer format. The question, who is allowed to enter Europe? As of July 1st, European nations, all members of the European Union, as well as the non-EU European nations of Iceland, Norway, Switzerland, and Liechtenstein, are expected to begin opening their borders to residents of Algeria, Australia, Canada, Georgia, Japan, Montenegro, Morocco, New Zealand, Rwanda, Serbia, South Korea, Thailand, Tunisia, and Uruguay. Residents of Andorra, San Marino, Monaco, and the Vatican will also be allowed entry. China is on the list, subject to confirmation of reciprocity, that is, if the country will open its borders to European travelers. The official press statement noted that individual European nations may decide to take a progressive approach to lifting restrictions on travel from listed countries. Residents of the United States, where the spread of the COVID-19 has not been controlled, are not allowed to enter the European Union unless they qualify for an exception. How often will the list be reviewed? European officials have said that the list will be reviewed every 2 weeks. It's possible that the United States will be added to the list if the country's epidemiological situation improves. A country may also be removed from the list if its situation worsens. Are there any exceptions? The restrictions do not apply to European citizens or residents, independent of the purpose of travel, according to the official recommendation, nor to health workers, seasonal farm workers, diplomats, humanitarian workers, transit passengers, asylum seekers, students, and passengers traveling for imperative family reasons, among a handful of other exceptions. Next question. I'm an American, and I don't qualify for any of these exceptions. Is there any way for me to get to Europe this summer? Americans are still allowed to fly to Ireland and Britain, both of which lie outside Europe's free movement zone, known as the Schengen area. In both Ireland and Britain, however, all visitors are required to undergo mandatory 14-day quarantines on arrival. In Britain, you can be fined about £1,000, that's about $1,230 U.S., for violating the quarantine rules. If I fly to Britain or Ireland and complete the mandatory 14-day quarantine, could I travel onward to Europe from there? Probably not, unless you can prove that you have a residence or immediate family links in Europe. Check with the border control authority of the European country that you are hoping to visit to find the latest rules. Again, it's a good idea to do a lot of Google checking, if you will. Next question. I'm an American citizen, but I live in one of the countries on the approved list. Will I be allowed to fly to Europe? The rules are based on the country in which travelers are residents, so American citizens may be allowed to enter Europe if they are residents and can provide proof of that residency in one of the countries on the approved list. At the same time, citizens of approved countries who reside in the United States may not be allowed entry. In either case, before traveling, it's best to check with the border control authority of the European country that you wish to visit. I'm already in Europe. Is it possible to move around? Well, many European countries are now open to visitors who are residents in other parts of Europe. To find information on a specific European country, visit Reopen EU. And by the way, that's Reopen EU, where you can find the latest rules governing travel within the European Union. I thought that Iceland and Portugal were going to be open to Americans this summer. Is that still true? Well, in May, Icelandic officials said the country would be opening up to visitors from the United States and other places, provided they submit to a COVID-19 test on arrival. Now Iceland is welcoming visitors only from Europe. The same is true in Portugal, which had indicated that it would be opening up to visitors from the United States. Now, American visitors, unless they are Portuguese residents or qualify for some other exception, are not allowed entry. I already booked a flight to Europe this summer. Is it possible to get a refund? If you have already booked a flight to Europe, you should be entitled to either a flight credit or a refund, depending on when you booked and what type of ticket you purchased. Call your airline to ask about rebooking or to request a refund. What about refunds on hotels and other bookings? Many hotels and tour operators are offering credits or refunds for existing bookings. Check with your service provider for details. Are Europeans allowed to visit the United States? Well, anyone who has been physically present in the Schengen area or in Britain or Ireland in the past 14 days is not allowed to enter the United States unless the traveler qualifies for one of the exceptions set out in the presidential proclamations that were issued on March 11th for the Schengen area and March 14th for Britain and Ireland. The rule does not apply to the United States citizens or permanent residents, nor to their qualifying family members. The U.S. State Department has more information, so you can check there. Wow, lots to think about when you're traveling, huh? Well, when you think about it, it's absolutely amazing how our travel options have changed since March when the COVID-19 virus began its trek across the U.S. In March 8th, 2020 issue of the News and Observer, there was a reprint of a New York Times article written by travel writer Teruro Imzawas, and it's titled, Cancel a Trip to Asia? Alaska Invites You to Visit. And let's step back for a moment and recall how the emerging pandemic began to affect our travel habits just a couple of months ago. As cases of the coronavirus continue to multiply in China and concerns about the disease have led travelers to cancel upcoming trips to other Asian countries, tourism officials in Alaska see an opportunity. Officials with Ted Stevens Anchorage International Airport and Visit Anchorage, the tourism marketing organization for Alaska's largest city, have begun lobbying airlines, travel agencies, and tour operators to increase airline service, reroute cruises, and generally get the word out about the sights and attractions of the northernmost state. The end goal? To draw visitors to Alaska who had wanted to go to Asia, as well as fill the hole created by Chinese tourists canceling trips to Alaska. Tour operators that were selling tour packages into Asia are seeing significant cancellations because of concerns about coronavirus, but people with those packages still want to travel somewhere, said Jim Chisnack, manager of the Anchorage Airport. What we're working on is attracting the demand from those people who want to travel. The marketing initiative is geared toward travelers from Australia, Northern Europe, and the continental United States. We just want people who were going to China to think of Alaska as a temporary replacement for a trip they can rebook to China in the future, said Julie Supp, president and chief executive of Visit Anchorage. Officials with the airport have been in conversations with United Airlines about increasing service from Newark, New Jersey, with Delta Airlines about increasing service from Atlanta and Minneapolis, and with American Airlines from Dallas. Internationally, the airport also in talks with several Asian airlines, including Japan Airlines, Korean Airlines, and China Airlines, about increasing service from Asian countries that have not been affected by COVID-19. Asia is really close to Alaska, about 6 hours from Tokyo to Anchorage, so there is a real opportunity for those carriers to reroute aircraft to Anchorage, Sisniak says. And Alaska isn't the only tourist destination looking to lure tourists. An ad campaign attempts to convince Americans and Britons that Australia is a safe alternative. And in Japan, the Empty Kyoto campaign promises travelers that if they visit the city now, they will have some of the most popular locations to themselves. Remember, this was available only in March, so I'm sure that has changed given current circumstances. And in a Facebook video, President Rodrigo Duterte of the Philippines encouraged people to travel around the country because everything is safe in our country, he said. And again, this was in March. Visit Anchorage is working a little more aggressively with travel advisors, cruise providers, and other tour operators to promote Alaska, Supp said. The message is being sent through newsletters and phone calls and at trade shows, she said. The effort to bring more travelers to the state is also meant to make up somewhat for the drop in travelers from China. Since 2013, the number of Chinese tourists to Alaska has increased by more than 70%, according to the Alaska Travel Industry Association, with the state's national parks and northern lights among the main draws. But in recent weeks, many cities in China are in forced lockdowns. Alaska, like other tourist destinations across the world, has seen a drop in Chinese visitors. And all that, of course, subject to change day by day and week by week, isn't it? Well, that brings us to the end of today's episode of Armchair Traveler. Hope you've enjoyed what we've been able to offer, that you'll be with us next time. I'm Mike Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, reminding you the content of our program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments and questions may be directed to 919-832-5138. Bye-bye.